It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Winning Plays Podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the NBA's winningest franchise.
Celtics season is here, and we are back on the Winning Plays Podcast, and this season is starting with, dare I say, fireworks for Ryan Brandoni? How do we describe this eve of training camp blockbuster deal? What's the accurate phrasing here?
I guess it's the fireworks.
The fireworks are here.
A re-envisioning of the team. It's the biggest offseason in terms of moves since 2007 now. I mean, bigger than Kyrie.
Yeah, easily.
Obviously, you know, the Horford-Durant play that only made it halfway through. But, you know, you take the totality of this offseason now. And I think a little bit back to the day after the Porzingis trade when we were talking and you were sort of saying there's more to come. This team isn't done yet. And I was, you know, thinking, well, you know, they've got these picks where they can certainly can do things, but in all likelihood, the team that they had built as of that time was going to be close to what they entered the season with. And they almost entered the season with it, but the move of the Bucks, I think, shook a lot of things and opened up a new opportunity for something that they were probably planning on waiting another, you know, until the deadline or, you know, there just wasn't anything else out there. It's not like they didn't want to improve the team. They just didn't think there was going to be anything else out there like this. And then this kind of whirlwind where the moves of their primary competitor opened up an opportunity for them to answer, and they went very hard after it. So yeah, it's a big one. It's a crazy off season now.
So Drew Holiday to the Celtics for Robert Williams, Malcolm Brogdon, Golden State 2024 first round pick, and an unprotected 2029. Celtics first round pick. You kind of hit on that rare, Ryan. Like the calculus of this deal, there's certainly plenty of question marks about this deal that we'll get into as we go through. But this was, I think, when you looked at the trade this week that the Bucks made, trading out Holiday for Lillard with other stuff, the question was for the Celtics, they have all these assets. Were they going to get a better player, a better fit with their stuff than Drew Holiday this year in season? And the more and more I think about it in the wake of this deal, it's like possible, but certainly not probable. Like, this could have been like the best piece they get. And the fact that he was available here before camp even started, obviously at a time where no one expected him to be available when he's with a contender just a few days ago, that makes what is a pretty high price here for an expiring contract, that makes that price a little bit easier to swallow, I guess, from obviously a push out your chips all in perspective.
Yeah. And the fact that it's an expiring contract adds another layer of complexity to what they did and what they will do. And questions about appetite for spending are always out there for any team. They've, you know, last year they spent a lot, this year they're going to spend a lot. The out years of this, assuming that they extend Drew, or if they don't extend him, that they're able to keep him in free agency, it sounds like they're hoping to extend him.
Those are talks that I'm sure happened before this deal was made.
Yeah, I mean, as much as they can. Sometimes those things don't work out the way that you expect them to. Obviously, with Porzingis, they worked out. It was all prearranged functionally. And so, you know, there's a lot out there that we don't know. We've talked many times about not knowing what the actual limits of the budget are. If there is no limit of the budget, then that's wonderful. And none of these things will matter. They may not matter anyway. You win the title and none of it matters. That's all sort of problems for another day, another year, another whatever. Because right now, this is I started having this conversation with a couple people on Twitter, like almost as we're talking. Like, is this the most all in that the Celtics have been in since ever? Like, I was looking at it, I think this is the first time that they've even traded that they've had a draft more than 2 years away where they didn't own any picks, maybe ever. Because even in 2007, they were starting from such a lower point where the stuff they were trading was more immediate. It was like young players that were already on the roster. It was picks that weren't that far away. And then I went back and looked. I was like, 1978 for a period, they didn't have a 1980 pick. But then they actually ended up with Kevin McHale from the 80 draft. Like they went back into that draft. But it's very rare that this franchise has traded that far into the future for things and to have had this level of financial commitment and to have this many players who are either in their prime or past their prime. And, you know, in some of the cases, like who made up the center of their roster. So this is a heavily, heavily all in team, except they're not really all in. I think that there is still some flexibility here over the next couple of years. We just saw like trading a good player like Drew and one first round pick and some swaps brought back Lillard. Like you can still make moves from this point because they do have other draft picks and some other younger players who we don't expect to be stars, but you know, could be something useful. But this is like as heavily in as the franchise has been in a very, very long time, which is interesting.
And that's a great point to the fact, like if you look back at the Ainge era, like the post 2008, like that's one of the few, I think, missteps he's made. He's like, he kept all those picks or a lot of those future first round picks. And what did it get him? Like,
well, it got him this team.
It got him this team, but that it wasn't this team, Dragon, but like, you know, like it got him J.R. Giddens.
It got him Tatum and Brown.
It got Juwan Johnson. Okay.
So at that point, yes.
I'm not talking about mid. I'm talking about like the beginning of the big three era, I guess.
Yeah.
Like your immediate window. And for all that Brad Stevens did, for all that Danny Ainge, for all the side moves they made, like they never in the last decade or in the last half decade, like the realistic time to push their chips all in, they never came close to doing that at any point. And the window to do that is pretty much ending now. Like you can't really even do this next season with the new CBA rules going into effect, with the payroll where it is and all these new limitations coming into play. Like this was the time to do it. They didn't have to necessarily do it right now. They could have done this, another version of this during the season for a player that may have been a better fit than Holiday, but there is no guarantee of that happening. So I'll give them credit for like at least like making that, like I said, as much of an all-in push as they can be, knowing that there is still some flexibility there with future picks and obviously who they have under contract.
Yeah, and I don't think that that's like you can criticize Ainge, you know, to an extent in that period. But I do think that the changes in the CBA and the way that they're phasing in over a year does put them in a unique position right now to make this decision where were the CBA that we were, if they taken the last CBA and just extended it forward, I don't know if they would have operated in this way of saying like, we want to do these things ahead of these particular deadlines. But it's even if that was the case, it's an entirely reasonable position to take, right? To say that you have like a superstar player who's entering his prime right now, and to say, you know, now's the time to go for it. And because they do have some amount of flexibility left, like you can go for it for a year, 2 years here, and then have to adjust and maybe do some cost cutting at some point. You would expect. But in the process of that, if that cost cutting isn't just selling off players for nothing, which it won't be because, again, of the new rules of the CBA and how difficult it is to cut costs, like in a 1 year period, you expect there to be some amount of movement around the roster because there's always movement around the roster. But like, I think they've opened themselves up sort of a 2 year window with this exact team if they want it, which, you know, is always an open question. And then a year or two of sort of like, okay, we're gonna have to figure it out at that point when like Tatum's extension kicks in and things like that, and the money just goes like wild. And there will have to be some understanding from players and fans and everybody else when that happens. But like, that's what being all in costs you, or being heavily, heavily in costs you. That's the trade off. And in a 30 team league where only one team wins the title, like if you're not all the way in, it's really hard to win the title unless you have like the absolute no doubt best player in the world. And that's not going to be the case with this team for all that Tatum's, all of Tatum's greatness. So totally reasonable position to find themselves in, an interesting way that they got there. tough day or tough off season for someone like me who, you know, has emotional attachments to certain players and follows the team, not just because I want them to win the title all the time. With, you know, again, at this point, Rob leaving and another big fan favorite after Smart and Grant. But in terms of like roster construction and roster building, like you see the vision at least, which is more than a lot of teams can say.
What I meant to say at the end of that was we have to do a welfare check first and foremost on Chris Forsberg.
I assume that's why he's not doing this episode.
Yeah, I know. He hasn't responded to text yet. So we're giving him time. We're giving him time.
He's in the Mind Palace trying to prepare for tomorrow's media day.
It's like after Marcus was traded, I think I waited a day or two for us to talk. But yeah, this is jarring. And when you look at the complexion of the deal, like on paper, this is, again, a lot. When the concern is like, okay, so you're going to give up, you are creating another problem by trading away one of your three legitimate like centers that have many injury and age questions, and now you're down to two. You've depleted your asset pool, you know, not like that totally, but somewhat here. But again, when the factors we've talked about blocking Drew Holiday from going to another potential contender here, and I think maybe a sneaky part of this too is like wherever Drew Holiday goes, like, you know, that's one less place that Malcolm Brogdon could have gone. And, you know, the more and more you hear about this situation with him, this was, you know, he was going to play. He was going to be, you know, on his contract and stuff. But I don't think fences were mended there. And I think, you know, both sides probably saw the writing on the wall here ever since June. And that wasn't why the Celtics made this deal. This is an opportunity that came about quickly. But I think that was certainly a factor to take into consideration. In terms of why to pull the trigger now, like sooner rather than later on something like this. All right, let's take a break to hear from our sponsor, FanDuel. Snap into the action this NFL season with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, new customers get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place a $5 bet. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. If you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, there's no better time to get in on the action. The app is easy to use. There's a wide range of betting options, including spreads, player props, over-unders, and much more. So visit FanDuel.com/Boston and kick off the NFL season. FanDuel, the official partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in Massachusetts. Hope is here. First online, real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling help line ma.org or call 1-800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play smarts from the start, gamesensema.com, or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Yeah, similar to, you know, what we just talked about with the CBA stuff, and a year from now, the things that they're doing now become against the rules. That combined with a player who's clearly unhappy, I don't think that there was really a reason for him to be unhappy with the reality of what it means to be an NBA player. Like, I get it. You can have hurt feelings, but yeah, it did seem like he was taking it a little further than the average player does who finds himself in the position of having almost been traded, which is lots and lots of players every year. But, you know, that combination of having an unhappy player and the pressures of what's coming with the CBA. And again, it just being a natural time to push more heavily in for a title run. It, you know, the opportunity arises, and it's also, you said it's one less player where Brogdon can go. It's potentially one more team that puts you at risk in, you know, particularly if it's an East team, but you can also talk about if he goes to Golden State, right? That's another team that you may run into in the finals where it becomes a problem. And if you're really trying to win the title and not just go to the finals again, then you have to look across the entire league. And if he ends up in Miami or Golden State or any other team that you look at and say that team could be a threat, similar to the whole thing with Lillard going to Milwaukee, by them getting him, it means that he's not going to Miami, right? And it's one less thing for them to worry about. Now, this is all an interesting one for the Bucks perspective, because I think you can, position by position, like, Holiday's a bigger upgrade over Brogdon than Lillard is to Holiday, maybe?
I would think so.
You know, it's it depends on how highly you value each of those players. But of course, the Celtics give up a hot take here, but like when healthy, the best of their three centers in this. I don't think really anybody else. I just think he is. I think he's amazing. I think he's the fifth best center in the league when he's healthy. He's just never healthy. He's just never, ever healthy. And so what's your appetite for risk with that player in that position? Like his impact on the floor stuff in terms of just like what leads to winning and how well the team plays was outrageous for years now. And yeah, I know he was never played and the team never was in a position to use him that way, but like there's something to that. So that's the trade-off in there. And that's not to say that they shouldn't have made the trade because he's never on the floor. And like, I get it. But losing Rob hurts a lot. And I just think it's one of those cases again of like, what are you going to do? Are you going to let the opportunity go by and go into the season with an unhappy player staring at a future set of rules that really limit you with a player like Holiday, maybe going to another, you know, to one of your rivals and all those things together, you end up with like, okay, I guess we're going to put in Rob and a far future unprotected pick and we're just going to go for it. So it's like any other sport, like the pressure's on now more than it's been on in a very, very long time, even coming off the title or the coming off the finals appearance to get it done and hang the banner now, because they're again, like for on a lot of fronts, very, very heavily in right now on trying to win it, which again, fine. That's not a complaint. It's just reality of like how you get to a title, right? You have to take this risk at some point, and they've decided that now's the time to take it.
And this is again, the, as good of a guy as you're probably gonna get a chance to spend it on. And for as, you know, valuable that Rob can be when he's at his best, when it's like the Rob or Al question, and it sounds like, you know, obviously the Blazers preferred Rob to Al for a variety of reasons, even though they could have probably sold off Al for some good stuff too. Rob's under control for next year. He's 25 years old. Like if you're a rebuilding franchise, that's a pretty
better than DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah, exactly. He's better. Yeah. I mean, like
nobody, Blazers, I mean, again, fans are gonna be nobody outside Celtics fans thinks that, but like he's a better player. He's at least as good and frequently better and better in ways that are helpful to a team than DeAndre Ayton. Like he's a wonderful player, but
he's making 33% of his money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But when it comes to like, who's going to be more likely on the floor in crunch time of a playoff game, like Al Horford is always going to be that answer for this team over him. At least by test time, whether that would have changed with good health and with more development for Rob offensively, more willingness to like finish around the hoop in those moments. We're going to be seen, but for the win now window, Al is still like, whether it's just Embiid defense or the floor spacing that this team craves, he's that. So do you want to talk about we'll do a few. I mean, what we're going to talk about this trade for
Wenyen Gabriel?
Weeks and weeks. Yeah. First things first. Let's get to Wenyen Gabriel. No, the Jrue Holiday. Let's do 5 minutes on Jrue Holiday, the player, mm-hmm. the fit, the lineups, and the pros and cons from your viewpoint in terms of how well this could work versus where, if anywhere, this could backfire.
Yeah. I guess if there was a player in the league that you were going to compare him to, it would probably have been Marcus Smart, or who would be pretty close to the top of the list. Like he's sort of Marcus Smart with all the rough edges sanded off. He's not as crazy. He makes great defensive plays. They're not as chaotic, at least not as frequently chaotic. Marcus obviously was also a very accomplished and intelligent defender and orchestrator of the defense and things like that. So I'm not saying that Marcus was only chaos and craziness, but like Jrue doesn't make as many plays of the type that we think of with Smart as of the winning plays. He's similar on offense too, in the sense that he's a big guard. He's not John Stockton at point guard. He's not Steve Nash. He's, you know, he's more of a sort of combo guard, probably a little bit more of a natural point guard than Smart has developed into over the last couple of years. Better shooter in the regular season. We can talk about his playoff performances, but I think it, you know, it's sort of, he's a known quantity, right? He's been in the league for a long time. Most people who are listening to this have seen him and are familiar with his game, but it is interesting that they sort of come out of, they start their offseason trading smart and then come back in on the other side getting a player of a very similar archetype. So it's easy to imagine how he'll fit in, because we've watched how Smart fits in with at least some of these players for years now.
Yeah, it's the Drew playoff numbers are like, ugh. But then it's, you clearly have to put in consideration, okay, he was miscast as the second option for the last couple of years for a Bucks team that didn't have Chris Middleton at all 1 year and then had a, you know, far less than 100% Chris Middleton last season. So like,
and the playoff numbers weren't great before that either.
True.
But you know, it, some of this is really like, it's difficult to make judgments on 12 games in a year. Right.
Yeah.
So it's not like, that doesn't mean that he's a terrible playoff performer, will always be a terrible playoff performer. And it's particularly, we're talking about shooting, passing, right. You know,
yeah, like,
and turnovers and playing defense and all those things have all been fine. It's just, he's shot really poorly in the playoffs for a while now.
33% from three for career, 41% from the field. Yeah. And so the question is now, when you are, the Celtics say, okay, yeah, we see all that. Slotting him in as the fourth or even fifth option in some of these, you know, in a closing lineup, like, well, you'll take that every day of the week. Like, who cares? Like, that the quality of shots he will be seeing here, or should be seeing here from three, should be far superior than any he's seen throughout his career. I mean, I guess maybe 2021 when everyone was at, you know, that Bucks team was.
I mean, he plays with Giannis.
Like, he played with Giannis, so he's got, he's got good luck. I'm not going to be there, but like. Yeah. As far as like floor balance, like having, you know, the offensive firepower as a team around him is going to be better this year than it's ever been in his career.
I mean, I think that's a little overstated. Like, he plays with Giannis. He was playing with Giannis, Brook Lopez, who is a phenomenal offensive center throughout his career, and Chris Middleton. Like, he's played with a lot of offensive talent before. I just, I think it's more notable that it's like, yeah, but it was like 20 games. Like, who knows? We'll see. But there's a lot of offensive talent here. The Bucks had a lot of offensive talent. Like, the Bucks were a really, really good offense. That struggled sometimes in the playoffs, in part because of Drew's struggles in the playoffs. Obviously, it was a good enough offense to win the title. But I do think that that's a little bit overplayed. Like, I've seen that a lot of people replying back when I said this, like, he struggled in the playoffs. Like, oh, well, that's because he's playing with way better players now. It's like, he played with some
good
players on the roster.
That's fair. Like, that 2020-2021 Bucks team was a wagon. And yeah, like, and this is more of a meteor track record, like going through three teams, like back in New Orleans, kind of the same rough numbers. But he did have, you know, famously had Lillard's number in one of those series, where they surprisingly swept the Blazers, embarrassed them, with Rondo running the point guard for that team and Drew Holiday being kind of the off guard defensive monster. And I mean, we'll see. Again, I guess looking at the lineup quickly now, what we know what the closing five is going to be. I assume it's going to be, you know, White. And I guess that's true. They could conceivably.
Depends who you're playing, probably.
It depends who you're playing. If you're going to go Delvig or not, I think against teams downsizing, I think White and Holiday are both on the floor. And then it's like, pick your poison, Porzingis most nights, or Horford if, you know, Porzingis isn't able to hold up for defensively for whatever reason on the perimeter. But not to say that I would be able to do that either at 37. So I don't know. It is, you know, all those questions are going to be, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, how many nights do you actually have all your guys playing during the regular season? In the playoffs, we'll see. Depends on a lot of stuff. As we go through the regular season, like, in a large part, who's the closing five in this group will depend on, like, is it the second night of a back-to-back? Is there somebody who has this injury or is in foul trouble or whatever, or having an off night, right? Like, you don't want there to be exactly five guys, because then if you lose one of them, now you don't know what you do. They have six, and it's five of the six is, I think, the easiest way to conceive of it.
Who do you start? What's your default starting lineup if everyone healthy?
Yeah, until they get another big, I think that you have to bring Horford off the bench. I know he's a prideful person and all that. Like, he's obviously knows the stage of his career, not just by the nature of the extension that he signed. But I can you really do anything else unless you?
How dare you insult Luke Kornet?
I mean, it's very obvious that Luke Kornet's biggest fan in the world at this point is Brad Stevens, right? Like, he has a greater amount of trust in him and has talked about him for years as thinking that he's quite a good player, who's better than perception and all that. But he seems to have a decent amount of faith in him. Or maybe, you know, it's just like, this is the move you have to make and we'll figure out backup center later and whatever. But yeah, I mean, there's a role for Cornette and Pritchard and Hauser and Brissett and some of these guys who we weren't, you know, weren't quite sure about where they were going to fit in the rotation. Now you look at it and you're like, oh, well, that's how they fit in the rotation. They're in the rotation.
And if someone gets hurt, you're playing a lot in the rotation.
And in the regular season, like, that'll be fine because there's so much talent on the team that, like, they're going to win a ton of games. And kind of, as long as Tatum's healthy, like, they're going to win a ton of games in the regular season. And then the playoffs will be what the playoffs are. But, yeah, I mean, if you need to, if Derek White rolls his ankle and misses some games and Peyton Pritchard comes in, like, they'll still be the better team, like, talent-wise most nights because there's just so much talent, which is a nice place to be starting as you roll into the regular season. It's just, like I said at the beginning, like, it's kind of jarring how many changes there have been this offseason, but you come at the end of it and you say, that's what, where do you put them in terms of, like, ranking top-end talent in the league? Are they, do you put them above the Bucks, sort of on the same level as the Bucks and the Suns and the Nuggets? Are they, you know, that seems to be the foursome, right? That's,
yeah, I mean, I think
from everybody else,
right? I mean, I, from a talent standpoint, I think you have to put them above the Bucks now. Like, the Nuggets, I think, should probably, you know, they took some hits in the depth department, but I mean,
that, have Jokic, right?
Have Jokic, exactly. Like, I think they should be considered the favorites until further notice with that, you know, starting five in place, and they can still obviously add some help to that bench during the year here. But as far as East favorites, I think this puts the Celtics there, because you look at the firepower, and I think just defensively, they have far fewer holes than the Bucks do. Like, the Bucks just have, you know, as dominant as that offense can be, there's a whole lot of question marks defensively on the perimeter for them. And the Celtics,
none inside though, right?
Like, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's true. Like,
they have some questions inside, right, with how they're gonna defend. But I mean, both teams are gonna be near the top in terms of defense, and then I think that a lot of, in terms, like, when you're talking about, like, just talent evaluation at the tops of the rosters, how good is Chris Middleton at this point?
Yep.
Is it the Chris Middleton that we've seen post injury? Is there some renaissance where he looks like the player he did a couple of years ago? That doesn't often happen at this age and stage of a player's career, but it sometimes does. But without, yeah, I mean, I think that the Celtics, as a regular season proposition, at the very least, are a step ahead of the Bucks, mostly for that reason, that it's Middleton is just like, you know, if he's not an all-star player, then you're talking about a team that's a little bit, you know, maybe we're talking about like a 56 win team versus a 60 win team or something, like, right? Neither of these teams are bad by any means. But if you're trying to split hairs at that level, I think a lot of it is like just the unknown of what Middleton will be in terms of the Eastern Conference. And then I agree, in the West, the Nuggets are very, very good. I think even if the Celtics had beaten the Heat in the conference finals, like, the Nuggets would have beat the Celtics at that point. And you run into matchup stuff. Like, the Celtics are a weird team because they're so well positioned to counter pretty much anything on the perimeter up through your wings. And then again, the kind of questions and a little bit less flexibility on the back line is something. It's just hard to predict what that'll mean in the playoffs.
And to close out here is, I mean, we were kind of referencing this team obviously needs help at center, and this is going to be, they don't have to fix everything now. This is something they have the flexibility to do in season. There'll probably be some cuts in the next few weeks from other teams with maybe some interesting names here. The Celtics, at least for once, can go to other guys that might have appeal, be like, hey, we have a spot for you here. If you want to play, like, you actually might get, you know, some solid minutes off the bench here.
You can't use the MLE though now.
That's, can't use the middle exception.
So they're now officially over the second apron, so they can't use the tax MLE.
Right.
So it's just minimums for
just minimums
what's on offer. Or they have the TPE from Grant Williams left if something comes up 6. In that way. Which million. You can also use the claim waivers. So if somebody
on
a minimum,
good point.
Or, you know, maybe not a minimum, but a little over the minimum gets waived, could use for something like that as well. Every dollar above the minimum costs a lot of money to add, but we don't know. But so there's a little bit of a loss of flexibility, but we're talking things that are not going to make or break the season, right?
Until Al Horford suffers an injury and has to be out for 2 months. No, I mean, these guys, obviously, if any of these guys make or break the season, that this team is in trouble. But I do think a way to make sure that everyone is good to go when it matters most is getting in guys that allow them to rest Porzingis and Al as much as they want, as much as they need to, and still not cost them in the standings more often than not. So is there, what's your dream addition as far as the cheap, the Grant TPE options, or just, you know, stacking some small salaries midseason once, you know, in December when the trade market opens up a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, a player who I've mentioned in the past, who I think is sort of a darling of a lot of Twitter, is, you know, does Xavier Tillman get squeezed out with the Steven Adams, Jaren Jackson? They have David Roddy. Like, they've got a lot of guys there who in Memphis, and he's only got 1 year left on his deal at low money. Is there a here's some second round picks sort of thing that can get that done into the TPE? That would be an ideal fit. John Hollinger, who obviously used to work for the Grizzlies, said on one of his podcasts that he thinks he might be Tillman could end up being the odd man out once they get their guys back. So you would expect to be some amount of plugged into what the thinking is in Memphis. If that were to play out, then I think that would be kind of an ideal fit. You're talking about players who, again, like, they're not going to make or break it. It's hard to know who's exactly going to be available after cuts and things like that. But they do have a bunch of second round picks. And if something's out there that they can get instead of a guy getting cut and potentially going somewhere else, or
you have first round picks,
that'd be nice. But it's, yeah, I mean, they shouldn't be trading a first round pick at that, you know, for what they're trying to fill here. But I don't know. Do you have you already compiled the names for Mass Live?
I have already started a short list for Mass Live. You already, Tillman is obviously on there. Kenrick Williams of OKC fame, $6.1 million under contract for 4 years. He's probably going to take 2 first-round picks for him. So that's,
he's also like 6'4".
Yeah, he's 6'4". You know, that's
he plays center these days.
He plays center at 6'4". Listen, that guy, that's an innings eater right there.
I don't know how tall he actually is, but he's
like 6'6",
I'm
guessing,
by any means.
No. Any other, like, as far as like low cost, interesting. I mean, purchase of Chua, again, if the Raptors season goes haywire, $4.3 million. I don't know what, again, like, that's more of a, just like a...
Also really small.
Yeah, also small. Like, there's not real bigs here.
And they have Cornette as a very large person, so they don't necessarily need...
Right. This is just someone who, you know, alternatives to Lou Cornette.
So that's what we're going to... Dwight Howard, Hassan Whiteside, all the Boogie Cousins, all the names.
I didn't even put these on the list.
No?
No,
the new era. They're not even on the list anymore.
Not on the list. We're, if you're out of the league for 2 years, you're not on the list anymore. But yeah, it's it is, because like even the $6.2 million, like, that's probably the extended for A, what the budget is at this point, and B, even if they wanted to make a trade, like, the only pieces they have to trade, like, who makes the most? The seventh highest salary on the roster right now is what, Peyton Pritchard at $4 million, like.
Yep.
You really can't stack much of anything to get anywhere for a deal for more than a guy making $7 million anyway.
We need Mike Muscala to get traded somewhere else and then cut, so that then we can reacquire. Because
there you go.
He would be another one of those things that there's nothing you can do about it, but it is the sort of falling apart of the Brogdon trade. As you unravel that, the original Brogdon trade for Porzingis, and how you unravel that, and would they have traded Smart for Tyus Jones anyway and picked up draft picks, and what would that mean for this trade? Like, there's a lot in there that is much, much bigger than this, that's kind of an interesting alternative reality to how this offseason could have played out. But one of the things that happens in there when Brogdon is not the player being traded for Porzingis and instead it becomes Smart, is that they had to trade Muscala, who right now would be like an ideal player to have it, because he's like $3.5 million and a really good third or fourth big. But it's just the reality of how things played out, right? You can't do anything about it, and that wasn't going to cause all this stuff to fall apart. So, yeah, the options aren't great. That $6.2 million is like $1 trillion in tax if they were to spend the entire thing instead of just signing a minimum, so I don't expect them to do that. But if they want to, then cool. I'm not going to complain. There's no... You're back into the state now where we've been talking about the new CBA changes some of the calculus of this, where it used to just be a money question, to now it's a money and... you know, and your maneuvers question for how you can build your roster. Right at this moment, they're already over the second apron. Like, now it really is just back to being a money question. But again, like, I don't expect them to go and get a third center and pay $30 million in luxury tax for it. So there's not a ton of great options out there. So yeah, maybe they already got their guy and Wenyen Gabriel and move fast and that they're willing to go. He probably would have been on the list if they didn't sign him today, right? Like he's that.
Oh, yeah, he would have been exactly. So like, and that's a deal. But he's playing for a roster spot. Like they're not like a bunch of these guys in camp. They're just gonna they have a lot of flexibility in terms of like guys. You know, certain guys are expected. You know, like Brissett's on a guaranteed deal, obviously. But
if you're Lamar Stevens and Delino Benton, you gotta be looking at this being like, I'm getting paid now because they got nobody else on the roster. Unless, like the roster fight has suddenly become easier if you have any kind of a deal already in place.
Unless there's some intriguing cuts, that's the only thing that can. Yep. That could.
Yep. Oh yeah, I mean, you still got to make the team, but there's less competition than there was a few days ago.
All right, well, camp should be fun here. Kickoff Tuesday. I wonder if we'll remain to be seen whether Jrue Holiday will be able to make that flight to Boston and speak tomorrow. I'm sure if not, it'll be quite soon. But yeah, a lot to talk about. It's going to be a very interesting camp for a lot of reasons that we get into here, and then obviously to see how the rest of this roster shakes out. Since I think you know, this is far from a finished product at this point, but make sure you're following Ryan on Twitter/X at DangerCart, and we'll be back with you guys later this week to break down the start of training camp.
And RIP Tim Wakefield.
Yes. Oh God. I know. Such a
very
bummer.
Sad. I'm gonna say that he's one of my favorite players ever. I watched when I was in college in late or early 2000s, I went to I don't know how many games that Tim Wakefield pitched. Very sad day. So RIP Tim Wakefield and everybody involved with his family and the Red Sox and everybody else. Great Boston athlete.
100%.